Yeah, everybody, sing along. I love this video.
Like young girl's heart.
It's got, you know, the awful, like, in studio, obvious.
Indoors, outdoors.
Indoors, yeah.
Billie Jean is not my love.
30 years ago today, this was the number one
song. I am the one, but the dream is not my son.
So, yeah. That's 30 years ago today, Billie Jean.
Welcome to This Week in History on Craft Beer Radio. This week in pop culture, I guess, this time.
Well, that was, I mean, I think it's, I like that, that, you know, we'll, as an introduction, you know, the little music bed thing. I like it. Just to start out, I think it's a good feature, you know, what was... We know it doesn't have to always be 30 years. We can pick whatever one we like.
Yeah, but we're going to pick whatever's more, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say tchotchke, but that's not the right thing. You know, whatever is more ironic, I guess. More ironic. 30 years, 20 years.
I mean, Billie Jean is a great song.
Well, sure, it is. But, you know, we could have played, what was the 93, the one from April 5th, 1993?
So, yeah, 1993 was in the, was, no, Freak, what was it? What was it? Freak something? Freak Me. Which, yeah.
Not the classic that Billie Jean is.
By Silk. But number three was Informer, which is... Yeah, I mean, that's like a terrible, horrible song. But
we'll have to cue that one up.
All right, well, that'll be next.
But it's number three. It's almost not. It almost doesn't make the cut.
But then number five was Two Princes, and there you go.
Two Princes.
Okay. So we are doing this on a Friday because Jeff has can't do it on Saturday, or he can but doesn't want to wake up. He doesn't wake up really early.
I don't, yeah, I don't want to have to drink, go to bed, and wake up at like 4:30. To go to work.
This brings to mind something that I'm a little bit kind of concerned about, just because of the way things are where we can only do this once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I have two events coming up in the next month and the month after that I'll be gone on Saturday. Next month is the bachelor party,
mm-hmm.
and the month after that is his wedding.
Right.
And my curiosity is, you know, the whole thing, way cheat day works is at least 5 days splitting apart. So my thing is, can we maybe schedule it so that we can do sort of a 5 day thing? So we'll end up doing it maybe on a Tuesday once. And that way I can save my cheat day for that Saturday. We'll try to do it early, not do a huge show, right? But
I mean, we can try to do something like that. But I mean, we've been crazy regular, you know.
Yeah.
So there's two things: missing a week wouldn't be a big deal, but we could also do two shorties in a night and then space it out.
We could definitely do that too.
So.
I mean, I like that we're regular. I like that we're doing it. You know,
we're taking them off. We're knocking them down.
Yeah, no, we went through a period when we were not very regular. We needed more fiber. I didn't like doing that. And we were, you know, tossing times around all the time. And it just, we, you know, in the middle of a 2 week absence, hey, you want to do a show today? Oh, okay. And do that. Mm-hmm. But as we got onto this, started off every Sunday and then turned every Saturday. And it really, I think the wheels started to turn and we got even better at it as we did. So I want to keep that going.
Okay, sure.
But just want to make sure we can, you know, schedule around these.
Yeah, if you start doing a compressed schedule, though, you know, it'll break that rhythm somewhat. It'll break your rhythm, right? So, I mean, it's up to you. You're the one with the limitation.
Right.
And, I mean, it's here at my house. So, you know, I'm pretty flexible. Kids are in bed. I can do the show, you know, generally. So,
Yeah, it's just, it's more annoying than anything else. I don't actually, this is a weird thing, I don't actually want to go to the bachelor party.
Mm.
I'm not a fan of them. I think it's debauchery for the purpose of debauchery, which doesn't interest me all that much. getting wasted and not necessarily getting wasted with a bunch of people who you want to be wasted with, but a bunch of people, but a whole bunch of people, more people that are crowded together that you're not necessarily as good friends with. And so there's a whole...
Everyone's friends with the central guy.
Everyone's friends with the central guy, but you're not necessarily right. cool with everybody else. And then it's like, it's also not going to be here. It's going to be in this like island place in Ohio. But I feel like I have to do it because, I mean, Damien's one of my best friends. He's, I'm a part of his wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't not go.
Where's that?
Where is that? Let's see.
Put-in Bay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's right near where we vacationed.
Yeah.
Vacationed last year. It's kind of like the south side on an island. That's right. Kind of what Put-in Bay is.
Right. Yeah, that's what I figured. So, not too enthused about the whole thing, but...
There is a brewery there. Not a great brewery, but there's a brewery there.
You know, at a certain point, you're less concerned about that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Once you get 6 or 7 beers in, it's time to switch the Miller Lights, and right. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just
has the world's longest bar, the beer barrel. They claim they have the world's longest bar, so you'll be experiencing history. That's probably where you spend most of your time.
And I don't know. I mean, there's plans for all types of strippers and all that stuff.
I didn't realize there were any strip clubs on Put-in Bay. I missed that part
of
the tour.
There may not be strip clubs, but there's certainly ways to get strippers over there.
They're not afraid of fairy? Like. They're not afraid of water?
I don't think so. I didn't even try this. This is Blue Point's...
Spring Fling Copper Ale. Spring Fling Ale Copper Ale. Blue Point, Long Island, New York. Craft brewed extremely fresh microbrew. And the... Here, look at this craft beer little stamp thing here. And explain to me the logo, the icon, the iconography
okay,
on there.
So in the middle is an umbrella with rain actually falling inside the umbrella, which is, okay, that's a little kooky. Surrounded on either side, micro, and the other side, brew, which is sort of a stamp. And then there's also like a circle surrounding that stamp. And on the top says craft brew, and the bottom, extremely fresh. And the font is like this kind of, it's this weird curly font.
And what's up with the umbrella? Unless it's a Long Island thing, or and does the extremely fresh fade away when the beer gets old? Is it a time sensitive label?
It doesn't appear to be. Maybe it's cold sensitive. Maybe if I hold it, it'll Oh, that reminds me of something to bring up for the main show, which is Sly Fox's cans.
Oh yeah, they didn't spend as much money as Boston Beer did, I'm sure.
No, but it's a clever idea. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you about that.
Just a strange logo.
So, to a lot of people, there was a death in the family recently. Roger Ebert is gone. And he's, he's part of the pop culture family. He's such a known icon. Never really agreed with him that much. But I can respect what he did mm-hmm. for the form and for culture in general. So sad to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I respect the guy. Never really followed him all that closely or anything. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, he was suffering from his jaw was missing.
Yeah, he had
thyroid cancer is what killed him. Was thyroid cancer the reason he lost his jaw, or was it something else?
I think it was thyroid cancer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, he was doing fairly well, even though he was, he obviously wasn't on TV or doing speaking gigs anymore, but he was still writing and doing things like that.
I mean, he was somebody who he couldn't talk and he couldn't eat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he still managed to figure a way to make life meaningful by continuing to write and do all that, and do a whole bunch of festivals and all this other stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, really, cool to see somebody figure out a way to keep things going, regardless of your condition.
Have you heard about... I'm sorry, are you done with the...
Yeah.
Okay. Have you heard about these Moorish Americans?
Moorish
Americans. So they're...
Like Moors, like from Africa.
Yeah, typically... Yeah, black, yeah, from Morocco, right? That's where the Moors are from. So they're dark-skinned people, you know, black. Most of them are just African-American. But they're claiming that they're Moorish American and don't have to pay taxes. Or I guess it's common for them to like move into a vacant or like not even like slum vacant, but like vacant mansions and claim it for their own until they're like forcefully evicted out and stuff like that. But there's some kind of thing where they're like, I was wondering if you heard about this, but there's this, let me think. It's been a couple of weeks since I've heard about this. Cause there was this guy that had moved into this auction that was,
You said you wanted it.
Lymphoma.
I lick you boom boom down. So anyway, yeah, go on.
I don't know. I don't have enough supporting information that's fresh in my memory. I just had it. I'm like, oh, that's a really fascinating thing. And if you could help carry the conversation, it would have been a good conversation.
No idea. I've not heard of this at all. I've not heard of anything like this.
Yeah, you can look it up and you'll see. But because there's actually like a religion, Moorish American, but it's kind of been co-opted by these squatters and the people that don't pay taxes and, you know, say they're a sovereign, like their property's sovereign from the United States.
But you still have to pay taxes. I mean, you know, they're going to get you. It's not like you can just do that and the government's like, oh, all right.
You know, like, well, they had to like ask, like, you know, have you come and like contacts, like cops are like, especially like, I guess around Detroit, like all the time they pull someone over and their driver, they'll have this like homemade passport made out of crayon saying they're, you know, Moorish. I mean, maybe not crayon, but it's obviously like a homemade,
right?
Not even trying to look like a real passport. And they're passing this off as their identification. So go look into that if you want to find, if you're one of those people that like want to find an angle to not, to get out of government responsibility, try Moorish American.
That should be interesting. See if that can work. I mean, I know there's people like that. There's like people who go to, people in rural areas will sometimes say, I live in a sovereign, I'm declaring myself sovereign. This is my sovereign nation. But, you know, the government's like, fine, do whatever you want, but you still have to pay taxes. You know, call it what you want. One thing we were talking about, because we're trying to figure out how to record Saber best, and we're talking about the equipment. And we've set it on an idea for how to do the equipment for now. Mm-hmm. But it just reminded me of an article I read today that somebody, because we were talking about how Sony makes this whole
$49.99 recorder, which is really good for the price, except it's lacking the one piece of control that would make me comfortable with buying these, showing up at Saver, knowing they can do the job.
Right. That's volume control. And
input level control.
Input level control. And so you have, and like you said, there's a low, a medium, and a high. That's how they market their things. And this was about Apple and how Apple is a, or this guy said that Apple's primary market is actually selling flash memory for a 90% markup. I thought it was an interesting argument.
It's,
I don't know if it totally works.
It makes you think. I mean, but the flash memory they do sell more, well, flash memory, but even RAM,
right,
which is also marked up, is less and less end user serviceable. You can't upgrade the RAM or the storage in your iDevice. You used to be able to. You can in MacBook Pros, but in Retinas and Airs,
right,
you buy a 4 gig Air today, you're going to be using a 4 gig Air in 3 years, and that just doesn't seem like enough RAM.
Well, no, I mean, this is 2 years old now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's working fine for what I use it for.
Right, but, you know, so it's 2 years old, you have one more year left on it, you know, and it's warranted lifetime, you know, things like that. But you know, there's 4 gigs of RAM in there, right?
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, even if... But that's the small, the low level of the 13-inch today.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I got the... this was totally... this is the best of everything that was in here. Mm-hmm. The best hard drive, you know, the highest of everything, so...
Yeah, like, you know, we're putting 8 gigs of RAM in all the laptops at work. We've been doing that aftermarket because you can get an 8 gig DIMM, single mm-hmm. DIMM, so the user can opt to add in another 8 gigs on their own dime. You know, you can get an 8 gig DIMM for like $30 now. And Apple's price to go from 4 to 8 on the Airs is $100. You know, and that's only 4 gigs of extra memory.
Right.
They're charging $100 when I can get 8 gigs in a single stick for $35.
So it's an interesting argument. It doesn't quite work because Apple sells image. They also sell intercompatibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just that they're selling. I mean, but it's part of their model. It's definitely in there. Is that when we sell upgrades, we sell them for much more than they would be in other situations.
Yeah, they always, you know, they always stage the. Making these things non-modular to to reduce weight and size, but you know you got to look at the value prop, and part of it has to be that, like you said, the vendor lock in. They can't get third party flash. They can't get an SSD for it.
Right? Why do you think you still can't hook up a memory card to iPhones? You can't do anything like that.
Yeah.
You can't hook up. You can hook the iPhone up to USB, but you can't actually use it as a hard drive. I think you may be able to do that, but
you can use that.
You can use a hard drive, but you can't access anything that you put on there.
You can't access the music and stuff, right? If you use it as a file drop, you can get the stuff off of it, but
the iPhone can't.
Oh no,
yeah,
it's partitioned off. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Speaking of Apple, skeuomorphism is out.
Yay!
Yay, but also, like, I miss the tape turny thing in the podcast app.
I thought it was still there if you
no,
go
the,
to
the new one.
Oh, is the tape turny thing gone? I know they still have the... Let's see. You know, that's funny you mentioned the tape turny thing, because I kind of liked... I don't like skeuomorphism in the calendar or anything, but I kind of liked... I mean, it's a podcast app, you know, it's like... Oh, yeah, no tape turny thing. Okay,
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, I mean, it's not that big a deal, but it was kind of, I don't know, comforting in a way. And that's sort of the purpose of skeuomorphism, is a comforting.
I mean, that's probably a good use of it, because it wasn't taking up space you'd needed otherwise.
Right.
You know, because when you're listening to the podcast app, there's really not much other information or parts they could have put there anyway. Where when it comes to the calendar, you got this, you know, huge fancy leather bound thing at the top, which is wasting screen real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe 50 pixels or something, but still.
And the little perforations that look like pulled, like on the notes thing, those little perforations make it look like pulled paper. And it's like that, I don't know whether that really gives the same kind of, I looked at the wheel turning thing because you didn't have to look at it. You had to flip up just to look at that thing. So I thought it was just sort of a little like added bonus, like almost an Easter egg.
Yeah, that's a good point. I usually ended up on that screen because I'll generally turn it to 1.5 speed, and that's where that control is also. You know, if I'm listening to certain podcasts, I'll listen to them at 1.5 speed instead of, you know, normal speed.
I can't do that. It feels awkward to hear people talk so fast.
The funny thing,
everybody talks so fast, and it just...
The funny thing about it is, if you're able to concentrate, it's not bad for me. But if you're not concentrating, you miss everything that's being said. Where if you play it at normal speed, you can kind of have it in the background. You can absorb most of it. But like if someone's trying to talk to you and the thing's playing at double speed, or, you know, not even double, just 1.5, it's hard to tell. I came up with an idea, a way to improve that algorithm a little bit. And that would be to, you know, not just play it at 1.5 speed, but look for breaks in, like, the, you know, if there's a end of a sentence, you know, cut some out there, cut some out, you know, opportunistically cut out things.
That would require advanced processing.
Yeah. The thing freaking can play video games and shit. It can advanced process a audio file.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's probably, like, if you get a, you know, a real audio linguist, phonetic, whatever it is, person in there, you could probably find, like, certain sounds you could chop out.
But the thing is that...
Like, particular sounds?
The thing is that we perceive... I remember reading about this a long time ago. We perceive that there are period stops and pauses when people are talking, but really it's sort of it's a long stream of sounds, and we just...
Maybe the
spaces we recognize where, you know, but the spaces aren't actually there, right? There's just continuous sound, but we recognize, because we're so good at language, where these things happen. So the spaces aren't nearly as large as you might expect. I see.
Interesting.
So that's why when you hear another language that you don't understand, it just goes, it sounds like they may be saying four or five sentences, but you don't know where the endpoints are.
Right. Excuse me. Got it.
What else? Another thing, another Apple thing we were talking about before, the kids' games achievements. Oh.
Yeah, so, you know, Allison has the iPod now, and she plays some educational games, but she also plays, you know, entertainment games. And I was thinking, you know, Apple is, you know, they really would love to get more iPads in schools and things like that, or be used for education, right? So it was like, part of their API, part of their operating system is they should have this achievement unlock type thing where you get so much recreation time only if you complete achievements, right? So instead of like having, because, you know, one way to do it is to make the games fun, right? Make the games engaging, make the kids think that the education, or make the education fun and entertaining and trick them into learning. The other way could be is, you know, show them that they put in work, they get reward, right? So they do the math problems, they get to play, you know, 10 minutes of Angry Birds, and then it locks them out until they do more math.
But you know? aren't you then creating a problem that wasn't there before? You're showing the kids, okay, this is work and this is play. You're separating them out. I mean, you say if you make the games entertaining, then it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing something where you're saying, well, you can only play these things and then once you play them a certain amount of time, then you can play these other things, you're saying these are work and these are play.
I see what you're saying. It makes the developers' jobs easier if they had the reward API, right? Because then they wouldn't have to work so hard at making the education fun.
Right. But there's so many problems I can see with implementing that, and how you measure that, how you verify that somebody is using that in a reasonable way. You know, some game company can come along and just use that API, hijack that API, and just, you know, have it be...
Have a button there. Your parents are coming. Press this button.
Yeah.
You're playing a shooter game, right? And you know, what was the...
Boss key?
Like a boss key. Like, what game was that? Was that Duke Nukem or...
Leisure Suit Larry had all, you know, King's Quest and Space Quest. They all had this button where if your boss was coming, you'd press it and it would show like a spreadsheet or something on your screen.
So that, I guess that would just invent that for, create a whole market for, can I jailbreak my iPhone, Mom?
Yeah.
I want to get past the reward API.
And just adding all those restrictions, you know, means that people have to then make sure the education games fit. And so it's just, and it makes the developers of the education games more antsy. You know, it seems to me that the best option is to just try to promote more creativity in the educational games and hope that, you know, I mean,
the case like today, right?
But where, I mean, there is, well, today, I mean, you know, Allison's getting ready for bed. She's getting a little jumpy. She sees me. It's a different sort of situation, but I mean, it did have a reward system built in where you played enough of these things and you got to add fish to your fish tank. I thought that was a cool idea.
Right. I know it's good. It is a reward system, but she wanted to play Monsters, Inc. And there was no way for me to keep her from playing Monsters, Inc. other than saying, don't play Monsters, Inc. So if we could have somehow like have some parental control on that, which was open and closed by Like, I'm not imagining something too complicated. I'm imagining when you spend so many minutes in, doing educational, you get an allowance of so many minutes just doing your chores, right? It's you get the allowance for doing the work.
Yeah, but
I hear what you're saying
back
about
to the point. If you make the chores, then they aren't fun anymore.
I mean, that's a good point. But you're not going to be able to find the fun version of everything. You're not going to be able to find the fun game that does derivative equations. And
if you're asking Allison to do derivative equations, you might be going a little too far.
So what else is going on?
North Korea is getting all
up
wacky.
Up in our shit. Is there new news? I haven't heard any new news other than when they basically threatened to nuke Washington about a month ago.
They've deployed, or they are in the process of deploying at least two missiles that could reach Japan. And people are keeping an eye on that.
Damn it.
I don't get it. I mean,
can't Dennis Rodman defuse this whole thing?
What I think is going on in North Korea is that there is likely a fight, an internal fight for power. And I think that Kim Jong-un is probably mostly a figurehead. You know, his father had all the control, and he's being sort of propped up. And maybe some people who are sort of, there are some people sort of on his side, and there are some people who aren't. And they're kind of, and what we're seeing is the external stuff that comes out of this internal fight power.
We're mistakenly assuming it's a concerted and unified plan
that we're seeing.
And it might be just chaos that we're seeing the side effects from.
And the reason why I think this is because it just makes no sense. It seems so chaotic, the things that they're doing, that it makes more sense, the idea that it is chaos. You know, it looks like chaos because it is chaos. Walks like a duck. It probably is North Korea. There are two science-y things which I could go into, or we could wait to the post-show.
We can save them for the post-show. What are we time? We got 27. We'll talk about The Wire real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So season 4 of The Wire. It's the season that Greg said that, I needed to watch. It's his favorite. And it's interesting because it wasn't an action-packed season.
No.
But it was a really good, dramatic season. Which was interesting. Like, it's funny. The show's called The Wire, and, there's no wires in the entire season.
Yeah.
Basically some wires falling apart at the beginning and that's it. And it definitely they held or no holds were barred. I mean, some longtime characters that you were invested in, gone.
Well, part of it was that they didn't know if they were going to get a season 5 pickup.
Okay.
And they got a reduced season 5 pickup after the fact.
Oh man, that was, I mean, I guess, yeah, I could see, I mean, if it ended that way, it ended very open-ended, and you could see where things were going, where you could imagine a happy ending in the long run, right?
I don't know about happy.
Well, but the people you really cared about were all ending on an upswing. They were all getting the good assignments. You know, it seemed like bureaucracy was getting out of their way. Not so much on the drug side of it, but at least on the police side.
Was for this? It four started with Snoop, right? Snoop going to the hardware store.
Yeah,
what a great scene that was.
Couldn't even understand anything she was saying. I guess I started to pick up. I mean, at the end, is she talking in the same? Like at the end, I could understand a lot of what was she saying. Like I remember thinking, like, did I learn that accent or is it not the same? Mm-hmm. Because that first scene was so really. A lot of words, you really couldn't tell what she was trying to say. And it was a long time before you realized she was actually a girl. It was a very androgynous character. The one scene where they're running through the warehouse after Michael, the youngin that they took under their wings.
Uh-huh.
And you know, you thought that, should we spoil? It's a great scene. I don't know if I want to talk about it. If anyone's okay. If you want to be surprised by season four of The Wire, turn off now. We're not going to talk about anything else. Okay. And now I'm going to spoil some great stuff for season four. You turned off yet?
Turn it off. We mean it.
Okay. So they come back from, now they cut to a scene. And so it's HBO. So there's no commercials, but it's like they, oh no, it's beginning of an episode, I guess. Yeah. Beginning of an episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Watching back to back to back. So beginning of an episode and Michael's running through where, so a little backstory. Michael at the beginning of the season had turned down hanging with the crew. Like Marlo wanted to give them all the youngins money for school. And he turned it down and walked away. And he was staying away from them, you know, not getting under Marlo's thumb at all. And then his brother's dad gets out of jail and comes home, and he's a child molester. So he actually has Marlo's hitman, Chris and Snoop, take him out. And Chris is acquainted with Randy, who gets called out as being a snitch. So they come back to the season, and Michael's running through this warehouse, and Chris and Snoop are chasing him down, and he gets cornered, but he hides. They come into the room, and Chris actually shoots him, and they fall down. And it turns out they were shooting with paint guns, and it was all simulation, and they were training him, and they're all buds. And that was a really good scene, because you thought they were after Michael because of him being tied in with Randy the Snitch. And, it's like it's all...
Yeah. I mean, Randy's, you know, you talk about people ending well. Randy's season didn't end well for him.
No. No. All the cops this season ended well, though, right?
It.
Yeah, I mean, because Freeman
right, yeah.
ended up as the, well, he wasn't the lieutenant, right? But he pulled in the empty suit to be his lieutenant, and he was running the, you know, the serious crimes. And, all the cops had a good end of the season. But yeah, Randy got put in the group home, and they beat him up there for being a snitch. And
I forget how Dookie ended that season.
He was slinging. He got promoted out to the eighth grade early.
Right, yeah.
And he was in Prez Belusky's class. Him and Prez were really hitting it off. And he didn't want to go to high school, and he was skipping school. And Presbo was in the car watching him sling on the corner. That's how I think that was the last scene that he was in.
Yeah, I thought season four was where it really you really saw, okay, this is a fantastic television show where all the elements,
all the kids, the kids acting was generally fantastic. You know, a lot of school scenes and a lot of inner city kid actors, and that was really good stuff. Yep, so I'll be watching. Basically, it got to the point where, like, anytime I had, you know, a choice of something to watch, I put on The Wire. Yep. It took a little bit of time to get there, but once it got me going, you know, once I got into season two, I guess, well into season two with the shipping one, that's the one that really gets you hooked.
So, yeah, season five is... like I said, it's shortened, so they don't have as much time to get into it. It's a little more contrived, so it's not as...
Are they going after Marlo in season five, or is it jump ahead?
I'm not saying anything about
it. Oh, you're not saying nothing?
No, I'm just saying that you just came off the best season of The Wire. Lower your expectations slightly.
Okay.
Slightly. It's still a great show, but it's a little more... some things are a little more... just they're less believable to a certain extent.
Okay.
Sheesh.
All right. That was fun.